TSN 1290 Sports Center update.
Breaking news from the TSN 1290 Sports Center. Late yesterday, the National Hockey League announced that it will not move forward with implementation of the realignment plan and the modified playoff format recently approved by the NHL Board of Governors for next season because the NHLPA has refused to provide its consent. In a few moments, Chairman and Governor Mark Chipman will speak on that issue in a media conference originating from MTS Center. TSN 1290's Rick Ralph is at MTS Center, and we're joined in the Winnipeg Sports Center by Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock as we begin a special extended edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, Winnipeg, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show special edition here. We will be going live momentarily to MTS Center, where Winnipeg Jets Governor and Chairman Mark Chipman is set to address the issue regarding the NHL realignment. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Rick Ralph is live at MTS Center. We'll hear from him momentarily. Gentlemen, this is turning out to be a bit of a disaster for the NHL and maybe a harbinger of sorts for bad news down the road as it refers to the extension of the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, Drew, you know, this is unexpected news. People thought that the PA would likely approve the realignment proposed and accepted by the governors in Pebble Beach. But personally, I think that the PA has some reasonable grounds here, and I think it's going to be interesting to hear what Mark Chipman has to say because, as you mentioned prior to the show, I believe he's the only owner who's been granted leave to speak on the issue.
Yeah, that's what I understand, is that because it really does affect the Jets first and foremost. Yep. In terms of the switching of the conference and the bizarre fact we've been in the Southeast Division all year. Here is the statement from NHLPA Executive Director Donald Fair. This was released late last night. On the evening of December 5th, 2011, the NHL informed the NHLPA that they proposed to put in place a four-conference format beginning with the 2012-2013 season. As realignment affects players' terms and conditions of employment, the CBA requires the league to obtain the NHLPA's consent before implementation. Over the last month, we have had several discussions with the league and extensive dialogue with players, most recently on an executive board conference call on January 1st. Two substantial player concerns emerged. One, whether the new structure would result in increased and more onerous travel. And two, the disparity in chances of making the playoffs between the smaller and larger divisions. In order to evaluate the effect on travel of the proposed new structure, we requested a draft or sample 2012-2013 schedule showing travel per team. We were advised it was not possible for the league to do that. We also suggested reaching an agreement on scheduling conditions to somewhat alleviate player travel concerns. For example, the scheduling of more back-to-back games, more difficult and lengthier road trips, number of border crossings, etc. But the league did not want to enter into such a dialogue. The travel estimation data we received from the league indicates that many of the current Pacific and Central teams that have demanding travel schedules under the current format could see their travel become even more difficult. On the playoff qualification matter, we suggested discussing ways to eliminate the inherent differences in the proposed realignment, but the league was not willing to do so. The league set a deadline of January 6, 2012, for the NHLPA to provide its consent to the NHL's proposal. Players' questions about travel and concerns about the playoff format have not been sufficiently addressed. As such, we were not able to provide our consent to the proposal at this time. We continue to be ready and willing to have further discussions should the league be willing to do so. Of course, as in all these situations, there's always two sides to every story. But based on that statement from Donald Fair, it seems as though the NHLPA's concerns were, quote-unquote, legitimate.
And, I'll let Richie jump in here right after me, but I think it's coming as a little bit of a shock when people were doing whatever they were doing Friday night, whether it was, at home watching hockey or getting it on Twitter or whatever, and it's coming to as a little bit of a shock in the fact that the NHL went ahead and our very own Gary Lawless was there at the NHL Board of Governors meetings, and they went ahead and announced it, and people basically thought that the NHL had, this was a done deal, even though the NHLPA did come out and say that we still do have to give it the final seal of approval. The problem that I have, and I think that Richie is probably going to agree with me, is that from a PR perspective or a negotiating perspective, why weren't these issues addressed? And there are probably many complex reasons for that. But when the NHL goes ahead and announces realignment as if it's a done deal or whatever you want to call it, and then the NHLPA really hadn't given their approval when the NHL needs their approval, is a shame. And to be honest with you, I think the Jets fans, Winnipeg fans, are losing out the most because the realignment was a necessity in the first place because of the Jets moving from Atlanta.
Let's bring Rick Ralph into this conversation. Rick, you're down at MTS Center. Good morning to you, first of all.
Good morning, guys. Just standing outside the media center here at MTS Center and awaiting for the chairman, Mark Chipman, for his arrival.
Would you agree with the statement that the NHL Board of Governors put the cart before the horse in announcing this realignment?
I don't know that they put the cart before the horse. They simply announced what they had come up with at the Board of Governors meetings, and at that time they did mention that it was now going to have to go to the Players Association for approval. And in between that time, I think that's what everybody has kind of forgotten about. The two sides have been negotiating, I guess, back and forth, unable to come to a conclusion based on a lack of information is what the Players Association is claiming of what they wanted to see. And so with a hard and fast deadline that the owners had put forward, Players Association unable to agree to it at that time, and here's where we are today.
I find it interesting in the statement released by the NHL yesterday, specifically Bill Daly, I guess he's the vice president or vice commissioner under Gary Bettman. He, quote, "We believe the union acted unreasonably in violation of the league's rights. We intend to evaluate all of our available legal options and to pursue adequate remedies as appropriate." I mean, is the NHL sort of indicating that they don't think that the Players Association has the right to block this this move?
Well, I guess that's what they would explain when they say they're looking now at all possible legal angles. There was some real aggressive language, I thought, in the NHL statement that came out last night. You mentioned the word unreasonable. In other words, they were forced to delay. The word rejected came out, and the PA has pointed out nothing was rejected in that it was withdrawn, really, from them based on a deadline that was imposed by the NHL owners. So there's some purported concerns is another case that the owners have used in their release from the National Hockey League. And so it almost looks like rhetoric based, you know, coming up to the upcoming CBA, which, of course, expires September 15th of this year.
Yeah, Pierre LeBrun was on TSN last night, Drew, and he was talking about the ability of the NHL to push something through if the NHLPA was deemed to have acted unreasonably. I don't think the NHLPA, if that was taken down, you know, that was taken to actually down that road, would be proven to have acted unreasonably. And I think if the NHL were to try and, you know, exert that force, that would only be a bad sign moving forward into, you know, as Rick just mentioned, the September deadline.
The question that comes to mind, I mean, you know, realignment is one thing.
Gentlemen, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Here as we're getting set to go here. In the media center, Mark Chipman has made an appearance. He has not yet made his way, and indeed now he is going to make his way into the podium. So we give it here just about a matter of 5 seconds. I'll follow him in, and we'll go live to the podium as Chairman Mark Chipman will address the media that have gathered here at the media center, guys.
Terrific. Mark Chipman, Chairman and Governor of the Winnipeg Jets, about the NHL realignment.
Hey, Waz, how's it going? Good. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming together on such short notice. Sorry couldn't accommodate everybody last night. I know you've got some questions on the news relative to realignment, so I'm here to take those questions this morning. Fire away.
Initial reaction, Mark. Were you expecting this at all, or did this catch you totally off guard?
I was surprised by it. You know, it wasn't something that I'd been thinking about, Kelly. It was, you know, coming out of the meetings in December. I think we explained we felt really good about what had been decided and thought that that's the way things were going to unfold. So I was a little surprised yesterday to find out that we're not going to be able to proceed for next year.
Said you were a little surprised, but had you been given any indication from the league that there was kind of a stalemate between the two sides?
No, I found out about it for the first time last night, Sarah, but I have to tell you that I've been made aware prior to the league passing the alignment setup that there was a possibility that it may not receive consent and if that were the case, I was asked whether or not whether we would remain status quo for another year, and I told the league that we would be happy to do that if this were to materialize, we would be willing to go along with a status quo situation for another year.
Mark, do you know if there's any legal ground that you guys, as far as owners, can take to kind of push this through a bit?
I don't. I really don't. And I think that this is a classic case of time being of the essence. So even if there were some grounds, I don't think there's really time to explore them or to act on them. And I don't think that's what the league's intention is right now. Scheduling is so critical. And as you guys know, like a lot of our teams play in buildings that they share with the NBA and establishing priority dates and getting the schedule built as early as possible is vital to this league. So there just isn't time to explore whatever remedies the league might have.
After your surprise went away, what was your next emotion?
A little disappointed, I would say. I mean, not overly. I think that, honestly, I think this is something that will occur in due course. I think it was disappointed because I was looking forward to that alignment next year and playing those teams. But we're in this for the long haul, Kirk, and, I think that either what we approved or something similar to it ultimately will result.
The union suggests that this meant longer travel for some teams. Did you have a chance to analyze exactly what it meant for your team?
We looked at it, and it would have been improved travel for us, for sure, because the bulk of it would have been in the central time zone. I think there may be some concerns about that result from, in terms of travel, that result from everybody playing everybody. But I think as a league, we felt that, first of all, I'm not sure that that's true, that those concerns are real. But in any event, I think the league felt strongly, and I understand, the players do as well, that there's some benefit to having a format where we all play one another every year.
Back at the Board of Governors meeting in early December, was there a schedule that was presented to you guys so that you could kind of see how this realignment would work?
No, there wasn't.
Would it be too simplistic, Mark, just to pick up, and again, maybe have conversations with Detroit, make a swap, because they do want to be in the East, you do want to be in the Central?
Fair question, and it is unfortunately too simplistic. I thought that, Kelly, going in, when we were in the process of buying the team, I assumed something like that would happen. But what I came to learn is that there really is no priority amongst the 30 teams in terms of who would get to go. And it really sets off a domino effect that if you, if we were to just swap with Detroit, there's other teams that would suggest that they are just as entitled to go to the East. I mean, you could make the case that Nashville, for example, is closer to the Southeast and that they ought to go. Columbus makes a very strong case about being, a newer market, and that they're disadvantaged because a lot of their games, they're an Eastern time zone team like Detroit. A lot of their games are played out West and the games come on TV quite a bit later, and that's a disadvantage to them, whereas Detroit's a lot more established. Point is, every team makes a very compelling argument, and it's just not that simple. And so if we were to go in to take Detroit's spot, it really would make more sense for Minnesota to take that spot because they're closer, et cetera. So really, the first time this was all discussed, what you found was there was no consensus at all. There were a lot of teams that make really good points. And what the consensus was is, let's try and find something that works for a whole bunch of people. I mean, like Dallas makes a great case. They're in a division. They play two time zones over against every team in their division in the Pacific. That's a real disadvantage for them. And I could go on. But suffice it to say, it's just not that simple where you just do a quick change, because it sets off, it first of all, there's no priority for Detroit technically, and the other thing about it is nobody wants to lose Detroit, right? The Western Conference, they're such an important draw that teams go, Columbus in particular, they don't necessarily want to lose an important draw like that. So what I learned very quickly was this is far more complicated than just swapping two teams, and really what the league's after is a greater system for everybody.
That's one of the players' concerns. Like, what would be a solution to that?
I'm not sure there is one, but if you go back and you look at the history of the league, there's often been times where there have been an unequal number of teams in divisions, And, you know, I understand that point, because if you're doing it on a sort of on a coin toss probability analysis, then arguably the teams in a 17 division have a greater chance. But that's not what determines the outcome. It's you got to win games, and really, if I think what you'd find is that in each division, you know, typically one team gets away from the pack, and then it's those playoff races from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that are really intriguing and compelling. So I don't know that that probability argument holds a lot of water. I understand it, and I've thought about it, but and I don't know that there's a solution, to be honest with you.
Marcus, some talk that this is kind of the opening, you know, salvo in a labor dispute down the road. As a new owner in the NHL, your thoughts on that potential coming up after the CBA expires?
Adam, I wouldn't want to speculate that that's what this is all about. I honestly... you know, I'd be surprised if that were the case. I'm not gonna, I'm very hesitant to sort of fall into that line of thinking. The players have some concerns. I'm sure they're legitimate concerns, and they need to be addressed. And we just don't have the time to address them right now. So I think that's all I read into this right now.
What comments have you heard from players, your own players this year, about the travel that your schedule, and what were their comments when the alignment was announced?
Haven't heard a whole bunch, Joe, on either front. I mean, the travel has been challenging at times, but it hasn't been overly burdensome, given the fact that we walked into a schedule. You know, it's been tough at times. We had that one really long stretch, but, you know, we also had a great homestand. So I haven't heard a lot of complaints. And, you know, the comments I heard when we came back from the meetings were generally positive. But, I can't tell you that there was a huge reaction one way or the other. It was more just conversation like this. What do you think? And most of the guys I talked to seemed to think it was a pretty good setup.
You said that you were asked whether or not you would be willing to go along with it. And should the VA... turn down the realignment. Did you have any option regarding, or what is your option other than being upset about it?
Yeah, I really wouldn't have any option. I suppose I could, you know, stomp my feet and say that's not fair, but, you know, I think one thing I learned about this business a long time ago is, you know, we're only as... you're only as good as we are collectively, and you know, in operating this business. And I don't think that you know, taking another year in the Southeast is that burdensome to us. That if it allows the league that the opportunity to create something better for all of us, I don't know that it's that big a sacrifice for a year. And I would tell you also that I think, you know, the league is going to be, because we're not walking into an already determined schedule. You know, I talked to the commissioner about this on a couple occasions, and I believe they'll be very fair and very accommodating in terms of scheduling for us next year. In addition, we'll have our own priority dates established going in, so we'll have the benefit of, first of all, you know, determining with the league when we can play, and I think as well they're going to be, as I said, they'll be very accommodating this year.
Bombers got money when they were living in the West and having to play in the East. Is there any sort of arrangement?
No, that subject's never come up. No, no.
One or two more questions, guys. The travel doesn't have anything to do with your team's world record this year.
No, I don't think it has had anything to do with it. I think, you know, we're still finding our way as a team on the road, and, you know, hopefully that's something that, as a group, they're going to get corrected here.
Mark, do you think that imbalance, and again, this is a hypothetical question, but everybody knows what the status is in Phoenix and the potential for where that franchise could go. Do you think that could alleviate the concerns of the union as far as, you know, the imbalance of the 2-18 conferences in the West and the 2-7 in the East?
I'm not sure about that because, I mean, that presupposes that, you know, that the eight play, or that there's 16, or sorry, that'd be 16 and 14, when really they're four separate conferences. It could be 8-7, 8-7. So I'm not sure that would alleviate their concerns because, frankly, Kelly, it's not absolutely clear to me what their concerns are as yet. Hopefully, there will be an opportunity now for them to articulate their concerns and for us, if possible, to address them.
The Players Association claims they asked for a schedule, a proposed schedule, at least a draft even, and we're not provided with that. Do you see that as possibly the thing that really hung it up?
I don't know, Rick. I don't know the details of what has been discussed between the league and the PA. That's way above my pay grade, and so I don't know what information has been shared. Honestly, I came upon this information about the same time that you guys did last night. I was at home and got a phone call from the league at about the same time that my phone started lighting up with polite inquiries from many of the people in this room.
Did the dog have to run under the bed?
Not at all. Not at all, Kelly. That hasn't happened in a long time.
Who gave you the phone call?
I got a call from the commissioner. Yeah.
All right. I just have a question about UND being in the game tonight. What are your...
very much so. I'm pretty fired up about that. It's pretty exciting to have North Dakota in the building today. Bumped into Carl Gehring a few minutes ago, and great to see him again. And so hopefully they have some success tonight. All right. Thanks very much, guys.
That was True North chairman and governor of the Winnipeg Jets, Mark Chipman, about the NHL realignment. The highlights of his comments, pretty much that Gary Bettman had given him the heads up that this might be a possibility. He was prepared to go along with another year in the Southeast Division. Not that big a deal was sort of how he had it. Let's go to some commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we will analyze this. We'll bring back Rick Ralph and much more to come. You're listening to a special extended edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
I was surprised by it. You know, it wasn't something that I'd been thinking about. You know, coming out of the meetings in December, I think we explained we felt really good about what had been decided and thought that that's the way things were going to unfold. So I was a little surprised yesterday to find out that we're not going to be able to proceed for next year.
Winnipeg Jets chairman and governor Mark Chipman in a press conference moments ago heard live here on TSN 1290. You know, company line, towed the company line, really, I found more than anything. He sort of downplayed the impact of this lack of realignment, as we were all expecting. Your thoughts, I'll throw it to you first there, Richie. Your thoughts, that jump to mind immediately.
I think from a Jets standpoint, you obviously, you get the short end of the stick, really, because your travel schedule is, once again, going to be difficult. And I realize in total miles it might not be the most difficult, but long-term road trips and, over four games and things like that, they have a lot harder schedule than do their division rivals. Having said that, I think in the overall scheme of things, I don't think Donald Fair was out of line at all. I don't think this was a well-thought-out plan. I don't think it was presented well. I don't think there was much evidence behind it. And I think Donald Fair... Forget for a second the September deadline, the CBA coming up. And then the shot across the bow. Maybe in the big scheme of things, which I generally like to look at, it would be a shot across the bow, and maybe it is. But I think there's legitimate issues with the new realignment plan, and I don't think they were adequately addressed to the PA's. They didn't adequately address the PA's requests.
Let me ask this question: did the NHL? And did Gary Bettman try and pull a power play on the NHLPA in this instance?
I'll answer first to that question. I would say it's possible, but to Richie's point, I think Richie is right. I mean, I think there's two ways to approach what's happened here, Drew, with the NHLPA rejecting this realignment plan. I think you can look at it as if this is a way to use the old bargaining chip for September when the CBA expires, or you could just look at this in a vacuum. Just look at it as the realignment. I think there's two ways to look at it. Yeah. And if you look at it like the NHLPA is using this as a bargaining chip going into the CBA negotiations coming up in September, you can make an argument that were they happy to let the NHL let this go through and then just sit back, wait, and then reject it? Or do you want to just look at it like from the simple perspective of them looking out for the best for their players. And if you look out for the best of their players, then Donald Fair and the NHLPA does have a point, because a lot of flaws. There are all of the issues that the NHLPA has addressed. These aren't minor issues. These are major issues.
Let's get Richie in here.
Let me ask you this. Okay, I'm negotiating with you, and I'm negotiating with Ezzie a contract.
Okay.
And Ezzie has a proposal here. And I say, well, what about this, Ezzie? And what about part three? And what about part six? Don't worry about part three and six. Don't worry. We'll figure it out later. Just agree to the contract, and we'll figure it out later.
Even though part three and part six are huge parts.
What? Well, then I would say, well, why would I agree to that if I don't know what it entails? Why would I have? There's significant rights that I have. I don't need to consent to it. Why would I agree to what you're proposing without having all the information necessary to make an informed decision?
And Richie, to go back to what Drew was asking us about, whether or not we thought it was Gary Bettman pulling a power move, it was almost like he was trying to not pull a power move, but tried to pull a quick move where he would almost trap the NHLPA into a position where they would have to approve it or risk alienating something. But really, the NHLPA has decided to reject this plan based on the face value of itself. And the face value of itself is that there's issues with the realignment from the player's perspective.
And just to provide further insight, there's two main issues. There may be more, but there's two main issues. One is the travel. NHL, as far as we know, didn't provide
the
necessary information about the travel schedule. Now, conversely, some may say because they play every team in the league as per this new schedule, that there'd be more travel. On the other side, you would say as a fan, you want to see every player come through town once. On the other side of that, you would say in the NFL that doesn't happen, in the Major League Baseball that doesn't happen, and in basketball I think this year it doesn't happen. So there are certainly exceptions to that. It may be that exception actually is the rule. But anyhow, and the second issue is this, is the unequal divisions. And personally, maybe, and I know Mark Chipman was downplaying it there, I completely disagree. You know, you have to win games. Sure, you have to win games. But there's one other team in your division. In a competitive salary cap environment, I don't want to give up the 7% advantage or disadvantage that comes with unequal divisions. To not have that well thought out, and I came on the air, I think it was a month ago.
This is the beginning of December.
It was exactly a month ago.
And I picked apart like many issues with this realignment.
Yep.
And I got a little bit of flack on our Twitter, and I think, do we have callers that day? I'm not sure if we did. But in any event,
Drew didn't take them.
You know, for me to sit down with the three of us, to be here and pick out a number of flaws in the system. You don't think Donald Fair is a whole team of people evaluating what was proposed to them? This was a rush job. There was a power element to it.
Yep.
And
a rush element.
A rush element to it. And the truth is, Ezzie, when you have 30 owners, millionaire and billionaire guys, coming through and having a proposal that doesn't have a playoff system or a Final Four system in place, I mean, we're dealing with huge business here. It wasn't well thought out. And to be honest with you, for the nerve of the National Hockey League to think the NHLPA would accept whatever they put forward proves to me that their arrogance may have no bounds.
Drew, and I know that there's fans out there. I know you want to get into something right now. I know there's fans listening out there that, and the most people that listen to a show are fans, so you have to keep in mind how this plays on them. And I know they're looking at this thinking, you know, this is Donald Fair and the NHLPA screwing things up and maybe even, you know, upsetting Winnipeg fans because we're going to have to play Southeast Division opponents again. But I think, I look at this, and I imagine Richie agrees with me. I think, again, this reflects worse on the NHL itself and the relationship the NHL and the NHLPA have. This means that after all of the you know, basically the problems that we've had over the last 10 years, pre-lockout, post-lockout, nothing's changed. It means the NHL is unwilling to work with the NHLPA. And to me, the statement that was made by Bill Daly, Rick Ralph touched on this a little bit, the fact that he was using such defensive language shows you that moving ahead, it's only going to get uglier.
Do you think that in any way this was a sort of a test case? The NHL was testing the NHLPA. We know that since the last lockout, the NHLPA has been in disarray for the most part. It's only in the last year or 2 years where Donald Fair's come together that they seem to be more of a cohesive unit. Do you think the NHL was testing them at all?
I don't really, Drew, because they know what they're getting in Donald Fair, and Donald Fair is the first real competitor that I think Donald Fair's very well maybe, you know, maybe the sharper of the two between him and Bettman. They're both very sharp, but he's not outwitting Don Ophir here. And he could have taken advantage of Ted Sasek and get that deal done and the collapse of the PA, and that was its weakest point. Don Ophir might take the PA to its strongest point. And Gary Bettman is in for a battle, so he better pick his battles.
And that's what I think it boils down to. I mean, if you look at the two statements that were released, the NHL statement and the NHLPA statement, the NHL statement is much more based on sort of trying to play on people's emotions. It is a bit of an attack ad.
Yep.
It's playing on people's emotions as opposed to playing really on anything to do with
the fact,
an argument based in fact.
Exactly.
You know, they're talking about how could they do this with such an overwhelming majority of our clubs. I mean,
right.
That's sort of a bit of a specious argument where, you know, they're saying, well, of course, you're violating the will of our clubs, so how could you go ahead and do it?
And we talked about the unequal divisions as a factor in why we don't understand why the NHL teams would agree to it, but from a player standpoint, players get paid extra in the playoffs.
Sure.
So some players are going to be having an advantage of being in a team division as opposed to a 7-team division. So is Don Ophir. Why would he agree to something that would give some players an advantage on others? The point of the Players Association is to protect everybody's interests all the same.
Richie, I went back to the Globe and Mail article when the realignment was announced. And by the way, when realignment was announced, it wasn't extremely popular among fans, but players seemed to be, let's say, lukewarm on it, or basically neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the announcement took place, there was a quote from the union spokesman, and he said, "Realignment requires an agreement between the league and the NHLPA. We look forward to continuing our discussions with the league regarding this matter." When they interviewed Gary Bettman,
yeah,
he said, "We expect to talk to Donald Fair about this issue now." The whole question is, why weren't they involved in the process from the beginning? If you knew they had to approve it, why would you go ahead and propose something or approve something?
That's an excellent question.
The Board of Governors approved it 26-4, Drew. We were talking about the four teams that might have rejected it.
Yeah.
Why was the NHLPA considered an afterthought?
It's a great question.
It's a very good question. And the truth is, because I think they tried to jam it down. They tried to jam it down their throats, and they said, let's see if you can stand up to us. And obviously, and in this
the
case,
results the results are looking really great now.
The NHLPA stood up to them.
Don Ophir might be the greatest collective bargaining players association representative of his era. And you think you're going to pull a fast one on him? The nerve.
Well, and that's a good point. That's a good word for it, is nerve. Let's go to break. Much more on this when we come back. You're listening to a special extended edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets.
I'm sure there are legitimate concerns and they need to be addressed, and we just don't have the time to address them right now. So I think that's all I read into this right now.
Mark Chipman, chairman and governor of the Winnipeg Jets, in a press conference that took place about 30 minutes ago or so, he heard live here on TSN 1290.
By the way, the time argument here, I don't buy it, frankly. You can't sit in a room for the next week and hash something out.
I'm not convinced this is completely dead for next year. I think that's a lot of public posturing at first. They go both, you know, behind the scenes, it would not surprise me if they're actually already starting to negotiate and try and figure out a way to resolve this issue. Just because they say it's dead, I mean, you know, time is not necessarily running out. You know,
as Gary Bettman liked to say every single day during the whole drama in the desert last year.
Well, of course. I mean, let's talk about the impact on the Jets. Let's pretend that it's going to be another year in the Southeast Division. Are you that upset about that, really?
Well, as a fan, I think there's an upside and there's a downside. I think, first off, the downside is the travel, and it's more so the long road trips, which may hinder the team's ability to perform during those road trips later on.
And you're saying from a player's perspective.
From a player's perspective,
right.
Yeah. And now from the team perspective, there's the advantage, you know, of being in a poor division, frankly. You're playing with Carolina, Florida, Tampa, Washington. I mean, there's probably the weakest division in hockey. So you have that advantage in terms of playing those teams six times a year. So that's 24 games against those four teams. 24 games against fairly weak competition for the most part. And then obviously, you know, Hassel was just in here too. And then the fact that you get to see guys in the Eastern Conference that you may not get to see as often in the years following. So there are, and that's a fan perspective.
Yeah.
From an organizational perspective, the travel isn't great, but the division's weak. So I think that's how you have to weigh those two against each other. And frankly, it's probably an easier sledding in the Southeast next year.
Certainly, compared to the division they were supposed to be in, which, you know, Detroit, yeah. Chicago, I mean, yeah. You know, Minnesota
was rolling right now.
Exactly. Teams that have been playing very well. So, frankly, I don't even mind the earlier starts. It's easier. It's one thing if you're traveling west, and I think it's always more difficult to travel west than it is to travel east. In terms of the effect it has on your body and everything, playing a game, you know, in the time zone to the east of you as opposed to the west of you.
Yep.
So, I mean, look, it's not ideal. It doesn't make a ton of sense that the Jets are in the Southeast Division, but you know, it's not. I don't think it's the end of the world.
And look, Drew, we're also in the Central Time Zone here, and really, you know, for the majority of games in the East, I'm sure there's probably about 50 this year, if not more. Or I guess you have your home game, so you have about 30 games probably in the East. You're playing one hour difference in time zones. You're not going from Pacific to East. You're not going from even Mountain to East. You have a 1 hour difference. And how many games do the Jets play in the Pacific Division this year? In the Pacific time zone this year?
Well, they go to Vancouver, and I think.
And they play.
Do they go to San Jose?
No, I don't think so.
No,
San Jose comes here next week. Yeah, I mean, they don't go to Anaheim. They don't go to L.A.
They already played in Phoenix, which I think is in the. They alternate, don't they, in their time zones?
Yeah, Phoenix, I think, is the Mountain time zone or something.
But I think it depends on the. But in any event, Drew, I think we just basically broke it down to the Jets play maybe two Pacific time zone games this year.
Yeah.
So in reality,
won't
the Jets
be that
are
much different next year.
The Jets are never playing in a time zone that's more than an hour apart from them.
Yep. That's right. And they wouldn't go to. They go to Vancouver this year, so they probably wouldn't go to Vancouver next year. They'd probably have to go to Anaheim again next year.
Like
or
once,
whatever.
I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like it's 1 hour. Obviously, I understand the miles on the bodies and things like that.
Yeah.
And you know, there's one side. It's the way they travel these days. It's not exactly treacherous,
hardship, yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it is still miles on the body, and there's, you know, body clocks and things like that. But overall, you're not in the East. You're not Detroit, Ezzy. It's basically sitting right below Toronto there, and flying over to Edmonton. Shooting way over to Edmonton for twice a year. So
it would be a lot worse, yeah, if you were in a Western time zone or an Eastern time zone and you're completely geographically out of your area there. But Drew, I want to take Richie's point a little bit further because I do agree with Richie, and I think that you look at it from three perspectives, how this affects the Winnipeg Jets. You look at it from the fans' perspective, the players' perspective, and the team's perspective. And I happen to agree with Richie. I think the players would prefer to have a travel schedule that was a little bit more balanced, fine, okay. I think that applies to any team. So I'm sure that the other players are also not happy about some of the moves that were made under the new realignment. From the fans' perspective, I do think there are some Jets fans out there that would like to see the Western teams more, fine. But I do think that when you keep in mind, this is only going to be 1 year. So, I mean, you're going to have Washington, Carolina, Tampa, and Florida just for one more year. But I think from the team's perspective, True North might not be happy about it. And I'm not saying this for Mark Chipman. They might not be happy about it for the fact that, you know, you're going to be in the Western Conference. Why delay it one more year? Well, you're delaying it one more year because the NHLPA rejected the realignment. So,
and you True North
might not be happy about that.
And the NHL put forth a faulty proposal.
That's true. Let's bring Rick Ralph back into the conversation. Rick, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, guys. Just ringside here watching some of the college guys work out here before their game tonight.
Yeah, of course. UND against Clarkson College tonight at MTS Center. You were at the press conference. What was the tone? We heard it on air, but what was the body language like for Mr. Chipman?
He was relaxed. He wasn't upset by it. Says it caught him a little bit by surprise, as you guys heard here on TSN 1290. I asked him whether or not they had even brought up a penciled-in proposal of a schedule at the Board of Governors meetings back in early December. He said no, that wasn't available. He didn't see that there was any indication really that this was going to be rejected. He understood that it was going to go to the players, but other than getting a phone call last night from Gary Bettman, he's not terribly upset by it, and he's okay with playing one more year in the Southeast. I think he would have liked to have seen it go through, but being the new guy into the league, I think he's not going to rock the boat too much.
Hey, Rick, Drew mentioned this, when we first came on air just after 10:30 in the morning, but can you confirm that Mark Chipman was the only NHL owner that was allowed to give a press conference? And are you aware of why the NHL only allowed Mark Chipman to give a press conference if that was the case?
No, I'm not aware if Gary Bettman has given a clampdown. I do know in past history and working with the National Hockey League and the Players Association in different factions, that when it comes to these types of things, Bettman likes to look everything down. So why he's granted Chipman the ability to talk today, I don't know. And I also don't know if all the other owners were put a gag order in their mouths. But at the same time, if the commissioner called him last night, I'm pretty sure Mr. Chipman would have had some direction from what he would be able to say and not say at today's hearing.
Yeah, Gary doesn't like loose lips at all. Yep. Would you, with Phoenix still uncertain, and there's talk of Seattle, and there's talk of Las Vegas, and of course there's talk about Quebec City and Kansas City and everywhere else in between. It seems like the NHL almost rushed into the realignment. They probably would have been better staying with the status quo for another year.
Well, I find it curious, when you look at the points that were released by the NHLPA last night, and the two factions, one of them being that they had asked for a draft of a schedule. And they weren't given one. And so based on that, they don't have enough information, so they weren't going to give it the go-ahead, which I certainly understand. I find it curious if the NHL wouldn't at least have some sort of a draft that they wouldn't have put forward to the NHLPA. Now, having said that, Paul Kelly, the former executive director of the National Hockey League Players Association, you have to go back, I think, about three executive directors ago, is in attendance today, and spotted him in the stands, Sarah Leski of TSNI and Joe Piscucci of Global interviewed him just a matter of minutes ago, and I put that to Paul himself, saying, why wouldn't they have a schedule drawn up? And he said the NHL would. They would have a schedule that's been drawn up, but he understands why they wouldn't show it to the Players Association at this point, because it wouldn't be a concrete schedule. It would be still based on something that they would finalize in the month of July.
But if they're trying to negotiate in good faith, and there is some question to whether or not they are trying to negotiate in good faith, wouldn't you sit down with your supposed partners? The players are the partners, really, of the owners. Wouldn't you sit down with them and say, let's make this work, let's hear your concerns? Why are they starting off with such a sort of animosity first and foremost?
Well, I think there's a little bit of posturing going on here to what Paul Kelly said today was the bigger dance, and that being the collective bargaining agreement that expires September 15th of this year. And, they really had to put this one through. I think they could have got it done. The fact that the NHL put up a hard and fast deadline and then wouldn't share a schedule for them to even look at, then I can see why, and not use the word reject, because you can't reject something when it's taken away from you. That's exactly what's happened here, is the NHL had a hard and fast deadline, and the NHLPA couldn't agree because they didn't have the information, so the NHL pulls it off the table. But I think it's really got a lot to do with the posturing that's going to take place to what Paul Kelly calls the bigger dance this summer, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately is right. I think we've gone through this dance ad nauseum. We were sitting around, and we'll sort of transition the conversation a bit over to the CBA. We were sitting around earlier, before the show, discussing, what are the really big sticking points in this CBA? Why is this going to be so controversial? Obviously, the players don't like the escrow. The owners might want to put a term limit on the contracts, but the players still seem to be making a fair bit of money. The salaries are good. Why does it have to always be so with such animosity between the two sides?
Well, it's labor negotiations, and if you look back to take it outside of hockey, take it outside of sports, very rarely do labor negotiations come through before a given deadline. So it's posturing on the two sides. Don't know all the factors that go into it for the NHLPA and the NHL just yet, but I do know the owners, I think, are, it obviously comes down to money. That's a big part of it. And I think there's a couple of things that the owners want to have a look at. Not so much the salary cap ceiling, but maybe the floor as well. And then when the players are coming off their entry-level contract of the 3 years, I think they're very pleased with the way the entry-level contracts work. But all of a sudden, if you get a player at the age of 21, who comes out of a three-year entry-level contract, all of a sudden can sign, for huge dollars at that point based on 3 years. Some of the players I don't think the owners have a problem with, but when it comes down to every entry-level contract that expires, I think that's maybe something they want to revisit as well. So there's a couple of things. We haven't heard all the issues yet on the table, and as you know, from labor negotiations, that would be well expected, is that you're not going to know at this point all the different factors. They'll talk through the summer, but I'd be really surprised if they get this thing done by September 15th. I'd be shocked, as a matter of fact. And I wouldn't be surprised to see what happens with the National Hockey League than what happened with the NBA this season, and that's possibly a December start for a season.
I always find it curious, Rick, and maybe get your comment on this, curious that, the NHL wants to police, the post-entry, the second contract that's become, long-term and big money for a lot of players, even though what they're really policing is themselves.
And you go back over all the other CBAs, and it's pretty well that. All of a sudden, the owners kind of get what they want, give a little on their side to the players. And then once the machine starts to roll, they're like, hey, wait a minute. And it's like they've got a, you know, a hole in their own plan, so to speak. And this is not uncommon as each CBA comes up. Otherwise, if both sides were really pleased with it, you could just re-sign and away you go. But as we've seen, that's not the case, and I doubt it'll be this summer.
Rick, before you came on, we were kind of discussing, I don't know if you heard it, but we were kind of discussing how this is going to affect, you know, players on the Jets, and the Jets as a team and fans, I guess. Are you expecting the post-game show to be flooded with callers who are upset with the NHLPA? Because the way I look at it, fans might be a little bit upset that the Jets won't be in the Western Conference and they're going to have to wait one more year, but it's really an issue from the players' perspective of maybe travel, but for fans, maybe, I got some tweets, and maybe the fans are a little bit upset that they might have to see some Florida teams. But how do you think this is going to impact on fans?
Well, what happens always with the labor relations between the NHL and its players' association is the fan side always goes to the player, and for the most part. But the way they see it now is that the player contracts are so large, and you and I and them can't really relate to what the argument would be when money has been brought up. So at the same time, when I look at it, this time around especially, I don't see it as being a big bone on the players' side. And they've made a couple of requests, I guess, from the owners that were not met early on here, and this is with the realignment. So, it's easy for fans to immediately target the players, and why wouldn't they sign? And they already make enough money. But I think when you open up the labor relations and look at the two sides, it goes a lot deeper than that. And I kind of sit right in the middle because that's, to me, I've been involved in labor negotiations and, well, been on both sides of it. And it's something that you just have to wait and wade through. It's an ugly process, and unfortunately, the fans always get caught in the middle.
Is it going to be that bad, though, to see, you know, the likes of Alexander Ovechkin and Steven Stamkos? I mean, we're still going to get to see some pretty good players, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think either way. I mean, if you just go and replay the season that we're just going through now and you mm-hmm. see it again next year, I don't think there's a big problem with that.
Yeah.
And as Mark Chipman alluded to in his news conference today, he doesn't have a big problem with it. It's a little bit of travel for the players.
Yep.
Chipman mentioned that, you know, the new realignment proposal would have saved them on a little bit of travel time. But I haven't heard the players too much this season complaining about travel. They say that it's a little bit of travel involved. But you look at a couple of the teams on the West Coast, and, after watching 24/7 the other night and guys in New York and Philadelphia jumping on a subway car, to go play games, you can see why some guys don't complain when you look at what's in the East versus the guys in the West.
Absolutely right. Rick Ralph, you know him as the voice of the Winnipeg Jets pre- and post-game show. Rick, you mentioned you spoke with Paul Kelly. We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to hear what Paul Kelly had to say. Thanks for joining us, Rick.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Rick.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Yeah, the travel has been challenging at times, but the comments I heard when we came back from the meetings were generally positive, but I can't tell you that there was a huge reaction one way or the other. It was more just conversation like this, what do you think, and most of the guys I talked to seemed to think it was a pretty good setup.
Winnipeg Jets Chairman and Governor Mark Chipman, in a press conference held about 45 minutes ago or so, heard live here on TSN 1290. Rick Ralph had the opportunity to speak with Paul Kelly. He's currently with College Hockey Incorporated in town for tonight's UND, University of North Dakota, Clarkson College hockey game taking place at MTS Center. He was formerly the head of the NHLPA, so he's a guy who would certainly be versed on negotiations between the NHLPA and the NHL. Here is Rick Ralph's conversation with Paul Kelly.
Former head of the NHLPA, your thoughts on the events of the last 24 hours?
Well, obviously, I just learned about it late yesterday. I'm not familiar with all of the discussions that have gone on behind the scenes. I have read the statements of both the PA and the NHL. You know, I would hope that this is a temporary impasse, that the parties are still working to resolve. You know, I know that there was a deadline that was established by the NHL, and I know that that's a reasonable deadline. The NHL does have to prepare a schedule. It's not an easy task, and they do have to have some finality there. Whether that that deadline can be slipped a little bit. You know, I would hope that that's the case. You know, certainly teams like Winnipeg, teams like Detroit would benefit greatly if the new alignment was put in place. You know, my own personal opinion, and I only state it as a personal opinion, as someone who watches the game and is interested in the development of our sport, I thought that that the realignment proposal that was voted by the Board of Governors was a positive. You know, obviously you have the imbalance because you don't have 32 teams. If you had 32 teams, you'd have a balance and you wouldn't have the issue of increased chances of making the playoffs. But I thought that, you know, given the various demands and requests and concerns were being expressed by the different franchises, I thought they came up with a plan and a program that made a lot of sense. And from the NHL players that I have spoken to, I thought that they had embraced it as well. So I was a little surprised by yesterday's news, but again, I'm hoping that it's a temporary thing and that they can work through it and still come up with some kind of resolution prior to next season.
As the former head of the Players Association, wasn't this something that the PA argued for a few years ago, this kind of conference realignment?
Well, we didn't argue for a conference realignment. What we argued for was a schedule which permitted teams to play home-and-home series against every other team in the league. Our players wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to get to each of the other 29 venues and that all of those other teams would come to their home ice. They thought that that was important for the marketing of the game and the like, and because you did have situations where there was some teams which wouldn't play another team for 2 or 3 years. You know, that proposal that we pushed at the time was rejected by the NHL because it would involve adding, you know, a number of games to the schedule and the like. You know, so it's curious that now they've voted in a proposal which, in fact, granted what the players had been seeking, and now the players have pushed back. You know, so it's ironic that we've found ourselves at this point.
And do you think there's a bit of posturing going on based on what could come up this summer on both sides?
I think that's an inherent part of the process. There's a little flexing of muscles that goes on. You know, the big dance is yet ahead for the parties, and so I think they want to demonstrate that, you know, they are influential. They do have the support of their membership, and they're not going to be pushed around. So, no, I think there's some element to that.
Can you appreciate, I know you're not intimately involved with it anymore, but how people are worried about that this is a precursor to... another lockout?
I certainly understand the concern for hockey fans. You know, frankly, another lockout would be very detrimental to the sport. You know, but I'm an optimist. I've talked to Donald Fehr on a number of occasions. I've talked to others at the NHLPA. I've talked to Gary Bettman and Bill Daly on a regular basis. And, I mean, we're not looking for a wholesale recreation of our system as we were 5 years ago. You know, I think there are some big issues, but they're issues that are resolvable. So I don't think that people should look at this issue, you know, as being kind of a precursor to a lockout or a work stoppage. I think there are smart people at the table. There is going to be some pushing back and forth. There are going to be some, you know, harsh words. But I think my own view is that it will get solved, and it will get solved prior to September.
Well, wouldn't the league already have a schedule kind of at least drawn, penciled up, I guess, for next season?
Yes. My guess is they probably have a league, a schedule penciled up for the new conference alignment as well as the current conference alignment, yes.
And why is it they wouldn't share that based on what the association, I guess, is saying now, the union?
Because, you know, there's a lot that goes on before they can really call it a draft. You know, the various franchises put in requests for dates, but there are issues like concert dates and NBA dates and circuses and other things that come into play. And those discussions and changes continue to be made for several months, and it's usually not until around July prior to the next season that they're really in a position to say, okay, this is a reasonable draft for which we'll only make a couple of tweaks. So it's not surprising to me that they're not prepared to share something which is really in its infancy at this point.
Would the Phoenix situation also be a wrench in this in terms of coming up with a schedule or showing the players a schedule?
It shouldn't be. I mean, I don't think the league knows what's going to happen in the Phoenix situation. Obviously, they would like to see Phoenix stay where they're at, but That's still a moving target, so I don't think that would be a wrench. I mean, they'll make a schedule, and whether the Coyotes play in the desert or they play elsewhere, I don't think that's going to be the big hurdle.
Could this schedule then come to place, I guess, in July, or is it possible that they're not even going to worry themselves with that based on the bigger dance, as you mentioned, coming up?
Again, I don't have direct knowledge of what they plan. I'm hoping that that between now and the All-Star break, you know, Bill Daly and Don Fehr get together and have a further discussion on this, and that the NHL perhaps relaxes this so-called hard deadline and maybe establishes another deadline. Look, if the NBA and the NFL can come up with resolutions to their labor situation and put together a schedule in a matter of weeks and then start playing games, we can do it in the NHL. So, you know, I don't really believe in hard deadlines. I understand why the NHL wants to know now, but I think that there's probably some slippage there. So I would encourage the parties to get together.
Paul Kelly of College Hockey Incorporated in town for tonight's UND Clarkson College game, speaking with our Rick Ralph, former head of the NHLPA, former executive director of the NHLPA. You know, you got your hand out, Richie.
Well, I just wanted to say, Drew, Pierre LeBrun from TSN tweeted last night, and was on TSN, and he tweeted last night and it specifically said, the league could possibly bring a grievance versus the National Hockey League Players Association if it feels and can prove the union acted unreasonably withheld consent for the realignment. Funny enough, you get into the whole legal aspect of it, and you know, in the statement last night from Bill Daly, he says, quote, at the beginning, it is unfortunate that the NHLPA has unreasonably refused to approve a plan. So the wheels are already in motion on that aspect of it.
It doesn't seem like they've unreasonably done anything.
They haven't, frankly. I don't think they will pursue that because I don't think they think they have much grounds to stand on. Having said that, they're still putting it in place so they have the ability to do so, or at least threaten to do so.
Well, I just go back to the fact, you look at the two statements that were released, one by the NHL, one by the NHLPA. The one by the NHLPA was based in fact and had some legitimate points that they needed to be resolved. Well, the NHL's really was based on emotion and nothing but, let's say controversial language with no real evidence to back it up. It had no, you know, if you look at the two arguments on its face, the NHLPA's argument is a lot stronger than the NHL's argument.
Right, Drew. And if it comes down to deadlines, okay, that's obviously not illegal or breaching anything. And if it's going to come down to reasoning, the NHLPA has already laid out their reasons why they don't like the deal. Now, I can't see the NHL having a strong legal argument for those reasons not being reasons enough to cancel the whole thing. So I really think here that what we're going to have is one more year with no NHL realignment. That's kind of the way it looks to me.
What I'm more concerned about is that we might have one more year with no NHL, and that's, of course...
Don't say that, because you remember what happened to me in 2004, 2005.
Didn't you join a fantasy basketball league?
I did. I almost did. But the amount of televised poker I watched was not healthy for anyone.
No, that wasn't...
let's hope that doesn't happen.
Let's go to break. We'll come back on the other side. Much more of this, a special extended edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here at Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
So I don't know what information has been shared. Honestly, I came upon this information about the same time that you guys did last night. I was at home and got a phone call from the league at about the same time that my phone started lighting up with polite inquiries from many of the people in this room.
Mark Chipman, chairman and governor of the Winnipeg Jets, in a press conference held about a little over an hour ago. You heard it live here on TSN 1290. The NHL's realignment plans. There was a crimp put into those plans when the NHLPA rejected the offer. Where do they go from here, guys? Back to the drawing board? But do they try and do it in a more conducive manner? I mean, let me ask you a two-part question. When do you really think it's dead for next year?
I don't.
You think they could still...
They could if they wanted to.
Do you think they want to, or do you think they just want to use this as some sort of odd bargaining leverage, you know, point for the CBA negotiations?
Well, first of all, the NHL should come up with a better plan. So if they don't want to go and work on getting a better plan, then they shouldn't come to the table again. It was a poorly thought out plan, proposed sloppy, without any, it wasn't proposed on a final basis. I mean, this is the problem. Again, we talked about it before, but you're coming with a proposal that isn't complete. And if you come with an incomplete proposal, there's going to be questions, and if you can't answer them, don't come to the table. Come prepared.
And Richie, I think it's good that we're spending another segment, I guess, before we get on to our regular time, because Drew, the way I look at it, we've been doing the show for a long time, and we're hockey fans as well. But the NHL has a lot of problems on their hands. You mentioned what the issues are going into the future, the next CBA. Mm-hmm. And okay, they might not be as macro or as large, whatever you want to call them, as 2004-2005, when it was clear, when it was Bob Goodenough versus Gary Bettman, mm-hmm. it was clear. Goodenough wanted the salary cap. Bettman wanted the salary cap, and Goodenough took a hardline stance.
I agree with you that the problems that they seem to have to negotiate for this CBA are a lot more manageable than they have been in past.
Right. Okay, but that's not the only issue that we have here. We have an issue with teams without owners.
Yeah.
This realignment thing is really a big deal. I mean, when you talk about how you're going, what your vision is for the league, what teams are going to be in what conferences, what the playoff format's going to be. These are things that have to be talked about thoroughly. And when you consider that scheduling, and we know this, and we've talked about this on a legal curve before, putting together a schedule for a 30-team professional league like the NHL does not take a week. It does not take two weeks. It takes months. There's a lot of things that are involved, and things change, and there's always things that need to be compensated for. So when you factor that in, the NHL and the NHLPA will have to come to an agreement about realignment and the CBA, hopefully at the same time, so that we're not in this position again next year where a haphazard plan is thrown together. The NHL has a lot of issues that aren't just about the CBA, and I think that people are going to invariably throw this in with the CBA, but I don't think that this is the only problem. What I'm taking from yesterday's announcement, Richie, is that the NHL and the NHLPA, again, are more worried about fighting each other than solving any problems and coming to an agreement that makes sense. It's time to move on past this. And I realize that in today's day and age, there's a lot of problems. We saw the NBA. The NBA isn't exactly getting along that well with the lockout. But when you have issues like, are you going to contract? That's still a possibility. Are you going to move the Phoenix Coyotes to Quebec City? Are you going to have to move the Columbus Blue Jackets eventually? And I'm not trying to alarm anyone, but these are teams that are in big trouble now.
There are a lot of teams, I agree with you, as you're spot on this one. There's a lot of teams that have issues right now. And
you know, by the way, why is Columbus and Nashville determining? I mean, first of all, I personally don't have an issue with the way the conferences are currently aligned. The 15 and 15, I think it's fair.
Yep.
I think it's 8 teams get in each conference. I think everybody's gone on a level playing field, aside from the fact that they play an unbalanced schedule, which I have a bit of an issue with, but that apparently does limit travel.
Richie, do the one-for-one swap?
But exactly.
Give Detroit... Ilitch is... How long has he wanted to be in the East? Yeah. He's a powerful owner.
Don't act like Nashville's on the same ground as Detroit. No. And Columbus.
You're talking about an original six team there. The original six teams, just by default, have more power.
And
the
then
Leafs, the Habs, all those teams have more power than the teams that came into the league in the late 90s. So the one-for-one swap, I do agree. Obviously, Mark Chipman is saying that it's complicated, but I really believe the NHL is making this more complicated than it has to be.
Detroit's a big... So they say the other argument is Detroit's a big draw, and Detroit and Chicago would be separated. Well, then have a few at-large games where Detroit plays Chicago
every
year. Okay? Now, what about the draw? Detroit's a big draw. Well, you know what? It's two games all year. Two games. Get over it.
Exactly.
Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, they all sell it anyways. So you're talking about a four or five teams, Drew, that get a big draw from Detroit. Anaheim.
Well, if you want to do
San Jose sells it. So Anaheim, Phoenix, I guess Colorado, they get a big draw from Detroit. This is all being held up. And that's part of the reason. It's short-sighted. It's stupid. I mean, it's simply stupid. I don't get it. And they're making it overly complicated. And they come up with this poor plan to try and pass it through, make things more complicated than they have to be. Then you get in a whole labor war. And if Bettman goes to another lockout, he needs to be fired, because that'll be the third one of his tenure. Forget that. I mean, but back to that point. We're again, and I realize every team is quote unquote on equal footing. It's not. You don't think the people are partial to the Rangers? You don't think they get preferential treatment? You don't think if the Maple Leafs aren't getting a little bit of preferential treatment about the whole two Toronto team business right now? If it was another market, they could get right in there? Because it's the Leafs and they make so much money and they're Toronto, they're Canada's and they're the league's crown jewel. There's a lot of factors here.
When you're when you're in that board of governors room and they're having that discussion, Drew, right, about whether or not to make that one-for-one swap, and that's what it was.
Well, the one-for-one swap, by the way, the easiest one-for-one swap that makes the most geographic sense is not Detroit. I mean, Detroit, yeah, it's Nashville.
Sure.
Look at a map. Nashville fits in perfectly in the Southeast Division. It just does. I mean, nobody cares because it's Nashville, and nobody wants Nashville, but everybody wants Detroit in their division because Detroit's a drawing card.
Detroit's got the support of all the Eastern owners. That's the problem.
Well, Detroit, he's getting pulled. They should throw a bone to Mike Ilitch. I think you're probably right. He's been a loyal foot soldier for a lot of years now, so he probably deserves to get a bone thrown to him. But
because of Nashville and Columbus throwing, apparently putting themselves in that picture, that's going to limit them from doing that. Is the league making decisions based on, no offense to those teams, they have their fans, but is the league as a whole making this decision based on Nashville and Columbus?
You want to make everything better? You want to make everything better in the NHL, and I've been an advocate of this for a lot of years now. Contract.
Oh, sure. Now the PA is going to want more players on teams.
Fine, so you give them an extra couple players. You got, whatever. You can make a 24-man roster instead of a 22-man roster. I don't care about that.
Timmy's in the house.
But just contract a couple of teams. That's all.
You know what? Okay, we've been on air for about 3 years now, almost 3 years. I think we're coming up on our 3-year anniversary. When we started off, if you would have said that to me, I would have not agreed with you. Okay, but now
about us being on for 3 years.
Pardon me.
About us being on for 3 years.
No, about contraction. But the way things are going, and the way a team like the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Phoenix Coyotes is attracting fans or attracting
there's too many teams in the NHL that don't have owners. Nobody wants to own the Phoenix Coyotes. Nobody wants to own the St. Louis Blues right now.
And Gary Bettman's picking battles on this.
Why doesn't he deal with his actual issues? Columbus is
Gary,
struggling.
Why don't you find an owner for Phoenix before putting together a poorly planned schedule and trying to push it through on the players?
Well, it seems like, I don't know, was this an ego? Was this an ego play?
I think it's actually that sloppy.
Is it just that arrogant?
Sloppy.
Is it arrogance?
There's an arrogance factor. 100% there's an arrogance factor here. 100%.
But I mean, I think he's learning, and he's learning it very quickly over the last 24 or 48 hours, that arrogance and trying to run a power play on a guy like Donald Fair is not going to work.
Nope.
I mean, look, Donald Fair deserves a lot of criticism for what happened in baseball, but whatever happened there, and as much as he overlooked the fact that every player was on steroids, he made those guys a lot of money.
There are some people also would say that Bud Selig was complicit in ignoring that as well.
100% agreed. But he made those players a lot of money.
Sure,
and it was under Donald Fair that Alex Rodriguez was able to sign a $250 million contract.
So worth every penny of it.
Was essentially only equaled this year by Pujols 10 years later. Not really any inflationary elements there. So that shows how ahead of the game he was.
Exactly.
Now, Drew, I totally agree. And I think Fair's done a great job. And I think the bully has met his match.
Well, I think the NHLPA, for the first time since the lockout, punched the NHL right in the face.
Drew, Gary Bettman has been the commissioner of the NHL, if I'm not mistaken, for 17 years. Is that right?
I think it's actually too long is what it was.
17 years, okay. He won the lockout. If you want to look at it like that, he got his salary cap.
The fans lost a year of hockey, but he thinks he won the lockout.
Okay, but just from
his... Well, but his job is the owners.
Bettman, you're talking about his ego, and he's been commissioner for a very long time now, basically two decades. And the thing is, he's untouchable, well, the one thing that could probably lose him his job is any type of work stoppage, because if that happens again, it'll be even worse. A lot of good things have happened post-lockout, okay? The Jets are back, for one, and hockey has never been more popular in Canada or Eastern U.S. One thing that has struggled big time, for instance, is teams in the Southern U.S. Post-lockout...
Whose idea was that?
Exactly.
What about the TV deal?
So, I mean, he is untouchable. He's not commissioner of the NHL forever. I mean, at a certain point, the NHL owners are going to have enough.
If you want some good insight into Gary Bettman's ego, go read the ESPN, the latest ESPN book.
Did you write that book?
I didn't. It's a fabulous read, and they do a little bit of on the negotiations between the NHL and ESPN. And NHL had no leverage whatsoever, and Gary Bettman walks into the room with a swagger to him, thinking that he's got all the cards. Well, ESPN doesn't need the NHL. The NHL, you know, and you know, you could argue whether or not the NHL needed the ESPN. I think the NHL is okay now on the NBC Sports Channel. But when NBC, when the NHL first went to the Outdoor Life Network, everybody just laughed at them. You know, it became Versus, and now it's NBC Sports Channel.
And it's worked out well, but at the time,
It hasn't worked out well.
I think NBC's a good deal for...
Good partner now.
They have a good partner now. I mean, has it worked out well? In the would you rather be on ESPN and... You know,
I agree with you. The Outdoor Life Network was a joke.
Well, but that's what it was.
And Versus has it's developed into a good relationship.
It's not Versus anymore. Now.
But, Drew, I would argue that when the hockey was on ESPN, that's when they got the best coverage. But they didn't... You're right.
Well, the question is, do you want to be a small player in the big pond... Or do you want to be the big player in the small pond?
The NHL's never going to be a big player with the NBA, the major leagues.
At this point in time, now you have the NFL. NBC Sports Channel comes along, and so what you have there is maybe a big player with ESPN, and you're on that station, and you're prominent there. So then they may be ahead of the curve. We don't know. We will, you know, time will tell, I guess. We will see if that's the case or not. But I think overall, when you're looking at Gary Bettman, he agrees to a contract that doesn't pay him any money, guaranteed any money, in this past NHL deal prior to this recent one with the United States. He does that. He expands south. That's clearly been a failure. There's been many elements.
With the
elements.
Exception of a couple teams.
Sure, but for the most part, he's overexpanded, excuse me.
Yes, definitely.
I think that you have to take into account as a whole, looking at what he's done. And I think when you look at what he's done as a whole, to me, there's far less to brag about than maybe he would brag about. Because I'm not so sure his perception is as that successful, but... Sure, he does what the owners want, Drew, but I think overall, when you mentioned it, and this is best, he's had his way. The cards fell as best they could for Gary Bettman with Goodenough because the PA turned on itself.
Yeah.
When the PA turned on itself, he kind of got what he wanted.
Two factions, if not three or four factions.
And even with Paul Kelly got pushed out. The PA is only now
strong now,
somewhat reunified.
Yeah.
And if they're now reunified, there's a strength there that they can match. I mean, you have to understand that the PA was taken over. They had Goodenough. Before that, it was a corrupt Alan Eagleson.
Yeah.
So they never really had the structure that they have now. So Donald Fair's coming from a strong union, and what he's doing is he's influencing these players to now also forge a strong union. And with that strong union will come more rights. And right now, the players have a fair amount of rights, but they're not going to be giving up much more. So the players and the owners have to understand that and look to work together. And some of the problems with the owners and with the issues that Bettman tries to fix, I mentioned it to Rick, many of these issues are self-imposed.
Sure.
You wanted the salary cap floor, right?
Right. Now they're stuck with it being too high.
You don't want to do the entry level. You don't want the huge contracts after the entry level deals. Well, then why do your GMs keep signing these ridiculously long contracts?
Right. It's because the owners can't. They need to be protected by themselves. But I mean, they can't control themselves. That's what it boils down to.
Exactly.
Let's go to break. One final break about the realignment. When we come back and then we'll go into our regular show.
You just realigned me right there.
I realigned you, exactly. You're listening to a special extended version of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
I don't know that it's that big a sacrifice for a year, and I would tell you also that I think the league is going to be, because we're not walking into an already determined schedule, I talked to the commissioner about this on a couple occasions, and I believe they'll be very fair and very accommodating in terms of scheduling for us next year.
True North Governor and Chairman Mark Chipman on a press conference about 90 minutes ago, heard live here on TSN 1290. If you look at the Jets' schedule this year, the one that we're currently in the middle of, it doesn't seem like it's an unfair schedule. I mean, when they go out on the road and they have to go to the southeast, they tend to go down there for a reasonably lengthy period of time. So it's, they're not flying back and forth to Winnipeg, doing shuttles all day long, all night long. So the schedule has been pretty fair the way the NHL set it up. And if it's one more year, like he alluded to there, I don't think it's as big of a hardship, on anybody else.
Drew, I want to read a few tweets here because, we're talking about the NHL and the NHLPA and how this sets up going into the CBA negotiations, and that's important. But I always like to also get the fans' perspective. Our boy Linklater 204 says, I love the idea of the Southeast. Early starts, Drew, you mentioned that earlier, and forcing teams to detour up to Winnipeg in the middle of the winter. Another one, Katie Thor at a legal curve, trying to see the positives. Maybe it will give the league time to create a plan that the least issues possible.
Let me interrupt you there for a second, Ezzy. Yep. How much, you know, we've seen a lot of teams that have had to come into Winnipeg this year on the second half of back-to-backs after playing in Chicago,
yep,
which is about a 2.5-hour flight away, two and a half hours.
Right.
How much of an advantage is there for the Jets on the home ice? We've seen their tremendous home ice record. It seems like they'd get that advantage again for a second year.
Well, Richie, the problem is a lot of teams have that advantage throughout the year. And it's not like one team, if it happens that one team has that advantage more so, that's not something that was put in there specifically. But I would have to say, Drew, to answer your question, yes, I do think it is an advantage for where Winnipeg is. You're playing more of the Southeast Division teams, and you're getting other teams in the Eastern Conference that are coming through Chicago to Winnipeg, which they do factor in. They do try to schedule games. That's why you'll see a lot of Western swings. And you mentioned the Western swings are harder, and it's because a lot of times, Richie, what they'll do is they'll do a California swing, mm-hmm, and that doesn't sound that bad. You know, California is kind of hot, not that bad. But what they do is they put those three California games in four nights,
yeah,
and that's why it's hard. Go to L.A., San Jose, and Anaheim, sure, play those games, three games in four nights. After you come from Chicago, not that easy. So I think there is a little bit of an advantage there. But really, because we're in the center of the continent, we're not really getting that imbalance of a schedule. If anything, when I look at the Jets' schedule this year, you have six or seven home games in a row, and then you have six or seven road games in a row, and we're going to see that actually four times this year. At the end of January and early February, the Jets are on the road for six games, I believe, in a row at the road. And then at the end of February,
but that is split up by the All-Star game.
That is, you're right on that.
Yeah.
So I mean, if anything, maybe the NHL should look at not having such long road trips and long away trips. As far as the travel and back-to-back games, I think when you have 82 games in 6 months, that's just how it rolls. Winnipeg, you could make an argument, though, Drew, back to what you were asking, can take advantage of it more so than maybe Western teams.
You know what? The schedule isn't easy. Long road trips are difficult on the team, probably adversely affect performance. Having said that, they're not playing. Again, they're staying in a weak division again. So, I mean, maybe those two balance off each other, and another year of it isn't the worst thing. So overall, I don't think it should be hindering. I think the Jets have bigger issues, such as talent accumulation. So they right now, it's will it be the difference between them making the playoffs and not? It's fair to raise the question. I'm not so sure it would be, though.
Well, maybe next year we'll be able to actually see Crosby play on home ice in Winnipeg.
Also true. And then there's that perk, of course, Drew. And you know what? It provides the league with more time to actually make a little bit more of an informed proposal, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and that's
not that they didn't have enough time the first time around, but
deal here. The big deal is the NHL, first off, getting this right, and then including the NHLPA in the process. That is not happening, and that's the whole problem, Drew. It doesn't. We can sit here and argue this all we want. How it affects the fans, how it affects the players, how it affects individual teams such as Winnipeg, Detroit, or Nashville. But when you have this kind of adversarial nature, which you can make the argument it's always going to be like that, then everything's going to happen the wrong way, really. Everything's going to happen backwards.
Isn't it sadly typical of the NHL to screw this up?
Yes.
Isn't that just sad?
You
wouldn't see,
yes,
the NFL, you wouldn't see the NBA, you wouldn't see Major League Baseball screw this up.
Couldn't you make the argument the NFL over any other league gets it right the way they deal with each other?
Sometimes it's easy to get things right when you're in the NFL and you have billions of dollars coming in TV contracts.
Trillions.
But, you know, not trillions, but
zillions.
Yeah, stop. It just seems so sadly typical, year in, year out, the NHL just never gets it, never operates like a well-oiled machine.
They
always look like it's amateur hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the CFL is operating smoother than the NHL is some days. And, I mean, the CFL, for all their quirks, was never known as a well-oiled machine. But it's so sadly typical that, you know, it just never works. The NBA would never realign without having it all in agreement,
right,
by the,
absolutely,
players, even as much animosity as now exists between the two sides.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's just so typical of the...
Well, I'm still shocked, Drew, that they came to that Board of Governors meeting. They approved it. They were there for a day or so, a day and a half. They approved this awful, this just poorly planned proposal, and then they were out of there, and they were arrogant enough to think it was going to be approved. Hold on a second. It wasn't even a finalized proposal. It didn't have everything figured out. And so you're going to give it, again, we've said this before already on the air now, you're going to propose something that not only is it flawed, but it's not even finalized. You're going to say, you know what? Yeah, to get it done.
Richie, you were right back then, a month ago, and now you're even more right because this is the result. Yes. So now you haven't come to an agreement, so now the Jets are going to be in the Southeast Division next year.
That's right.
When the whole point of this was to have the realignment.
That's right, yes.
And, you know, we can argue again whether or not this is good for fans or not, and I think some fans will like it, some fans won't.
I don't mind it personally. I mean, I don't have a big problem with it. I like the 6 o'clock starts or the 6:30 starts for the road games.
I don't mind it.
It doesn't strike me as being that big of a hardship. It's just so sadly typical.
As I said, yeah. Jets fans should be more concerned with talent.
And that's a good segue, Richard. When we come back on the other side, we're going to get much more into the actual Jets on ice product. They're in Buffalo with a 6 p.m. puck drop tonight here on TSN 1290. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Much, much more to come. 3 hours of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show coming up next on TSN 1290.